The Survivor Specials are back, and today we have predictions for episode number 12, Prop Bet Game, second to last episode of the Prop Bet Game. And I am joined by Tommy Smokes from Snuff and Torches. You might know him from other things too, Surviving Barstool season 3 or 2. I don't know. How many seasons of Surviving Barstool are you on? Just one?
1 and 3.
It was 1 and 3. Look at that. I got that. That's impressive. Yeah. I didn't look that up beforehand. Tommy, I'm glad to have you here. I know a lot of people who listen to us also listen to Snuff and Torches. So I'm just going to ask this for the people who don't. How are you feeling about 50? How does it feel to be doing another podcast about 50? Are you like excited to be podcasting about 50? Have you been over 50? Where have you stood on this?
Oh, I've liked it a lot. I've really liked it. I'm always happy to talk Survivor too. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's high highs, low lows, I would say maybe 50. Like, obviously, the Mr. Beast coin, the Devins thing. I thought that was an unbelievable episode. I thought there were a lot of really good episodes earlier in the season, too, where, like, it wasn't even anything that crazy happening. It was just, like, really good, like, storytelling and editing that just felt like a lot of old school Survivor. Like, there's been, I feel like, 3 episodes this season where I've left being like, that's one of the best Survivor episodes I've seen, which is a good thing. Now, you know, the Christian and Jimmy Fallon thing was a travesty. And, you know, there's some, like, the Billie Eilish thing was a total whiff. Like, I don't love the one from last week. But overall, I think, like, it seems like they're hitting more often than they're missing. So, you know, you can make an argument that maybe we wish there were better people left in the end. Like, Suri is really the person I wanted, like, Suri, Coach, Ozzy, Colby. I was rooting for all the old school people too, to go far. So that's a little bit disappointing. But overall, I mean, that's nitpicking. I think it's been a great season, like, hands down, best of the new era, if you even consider it the new era, but best in season 40 for sure.
Yeah, I have a hard time figuring out if I'm considering this new era or not. Like, it's 26 days, but there's so much of it that's so different. And then I'm watching Colby play and Coach play and Chrissy play, and it's like, how old school can that really, really be? We have a Hella Grone. I have no idea. I will sell my firstborn for Suri to win. I don't know if they have a firstborn or not. It's pretty much the feeling, though, of the online community.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I was rooting for all the old school people, really with the exception of Ozzy and Steph. I really didn't care that they were back. That didn't do anything for me. But then Ozzy was amazing this season. And honestly, I was more into Steph's storyline than I thought, too. But, I mean, I picked Devins as my preseason winner pick, and I've just been, like, riding that the whole time and saying, give me a Devins win. But Devins and Suri feeling like one of them is going to be seventh place is a bummer to go into the finale with just two old school people, and one of them played on season – like, one of them is Aubrey, who we've seen 3 times already.
Don't get me started.
Let's get you started. Let's do it.
Listen, I feel on – like, so when we did our Snuff and Torches season preview in – May, or no, it's May now. What month is it? I don't know. Maybe we did in January or February. We did a preview of the cast. We had Stephen Fish back on, and we unleashed, sorry. We did one in December, right after the cast got announced, like after 49, where it was not Stephen Fish back. It was just us. And like, we were like, oh, fucking Aubrey's back. And we unleashed like this level of hate against Aubrey in our live chat that we didn't know. I said, it's like when Oppenheimer looks back and he's like, oh my God, like, what have I created? Like, I didn't realize the swell of online Aubrey hate there was. Here's my issue with Aubrey is I don't think she deserves to play this many times. She's never been to me like a memorable character or an engaging character or somebody that's like fun to root for. A lot of times she's just like kind of miserable out there. She's got some good like snarky confessionals, I guess, here and there, but to me she's just not a fun player at all, and she's not an exciting player to root for. And like, the fact that she was back for this, when I felt like there were so many, like, you had, if you're gonna consider her in the old school, right, the before 40, you had so many other people to choose from. I thought that getting her was just disappointing. And like, even this season it feels like she's just falling upwards kind of. I just don't find it like, I don't find her like fun to watch or root for. Now, the other side of it is like, you know, I go to more of these events now, and I haven't met her face to face, but she was at this event. Like, you meet these people, you realize like, yeah, they're real people. They're not just TV reality show characters. So you feel bad like blindly hating on someone. And I'm sure that she's in person lovely and a great woman and all that. And it's not like it's anything personal, but you got to put that aside. And just when I'm focusing on Survivor, it's like, God, I just don't like watching Aubrey play Survivor.
I love all that. By the way, my microphone was definitely the wrong one, Fenderman. So now I'm back. Fenderman saved me from my bad audio, hopefully, and hopefully it's better. But I hear what you're saying. I mean, I'm like the biggest Michelle person out there, and my audience knows that, and they get tired of me saying it because I'm just like the biggest Michelle person out there. But we're watching Ko Rong now for our Patreon, and it just happened to time out where like we're watching Ko Rong right as this season is ending. And I will say what's fascinating to me about Aubrey on that season is it takes her a lot longer to get going than I remembered. Like I remembered her having her mental break early on and being like, I wish you guys met me outside of this. This isn't who I really am, all of that. But it takes her a lot longer to become the Aubrey that we remember her as from Ko Rong. And then in Game Changer, she gets overshadowed by such a big cast. But you also had people like Troyzan, who we'd only seen play once, who gets completely dismissed by the edit. Ozzy, who had more confessionals in episode one of this season than he did all of Game Changers. Like, you had such a big cast. I know Game Changers is the one people laugh at, but that really was a big cast when you think about it. Sandra,
Game Changers, one of the most disappointing seasons ever.
Very disappointing season, yeah. But massive cast. That would make sense. Like, somebody like Aubrey, who'd only played two seasons earlier, gets overshadowed. And then Edge of Extinction, it was like, all right, that's that. Okay, what's up with her? And so now when she comes back for this season, I remember being like, we were talking a lot. Can she win? Can she not win? What do we actually think about her game? And early on, I was saying there's no way Aubrey can win this season. And then that changed for me as more and more of like the Edge of Extinction people started commenting on our posts. And this was before the season even filmed. This was when they just announced who the cast was and that was it. And you had like Ron Clark, Lauren O'Connell, Kelly Wentworth being like, no, Aubrey can actually win this game. Edge of Extinction just like was not representative of her. And what's funny is now I'm watching Aubrey play a game where I honestly think she's one of the two or three front runners to win the game, if not the front runner. And yet she's playing the game that is probably like the least interesting version of what Aubrey has played so far. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, well, I think there's two, like, I agree that she's one of, if not the most likely winner, but to me, that's all based on the edit. Like when you look at like Aubrey versus Genevieve being built up as like this whole thing. And it was like pretty anticlimactic. Like, yeah, they got whatever the Blood Moon. They ended up like, right. It was the Blood Moon where Aubrey just ended up with like a bunch of her allies and Genevieve didn't like on that tribe. And like the confessional, I saw someone in your chat just said the Michelle flashback where it was like, I know that I have to make a big move. It just feels even the, she got her family letter read. Like she's from day one been getting a like fleshed out edit for really not doing anything. Like she's lucky that her tribe, her original tribe, never went to tribal council. Otherwise she would have been first to go. She gets gifted an idol, which by the way, she botches. So she gets lucky that she's in the Blood Moon thing and that she's got her allies there. Genevieve goes home. Then like, she's like, oh, sorry guys, I'll just play my idol next time. Plays it for no apparent reason. Like last time she should have went out last week. She gets lucky of Ozzy pulling out like one of the most dumb things ever in Survivor history and just being like, oh, here's my whole game plan, treating her like a jury member already. Like she's very much just like, I feel like been, like I said, falling upwards this season or failing upwards, whatever the hell it's called. And I don't know, to me, and all, you brought up her old seasons. Like, so my Survivor memory is good and bad. There's some seasons I remember super well. Some of the new era season, like I've seen them all, but I haven't rewatched them all. So like all the new era seasons blend together. I remember Ko Rong. I know that she loses in the finals to Michelle and Ty, or she beats Ty, but whatever, lose to Michelle. That's the final three. Game Changers and Edge of Extinction. If you ask me to name a single Aubrey moment from either of those seasons, I can't. Now, maybe that's on me not remembering well enough. I just like the idea, and someone else in the chat earlier said, like, she's come back every chance she's had to, there's been able to come back. But she's on 32. Next returning season's 34. She's back. Next time after that's 38. She's back. Next time after that's 40. She can't be back because she hasn't won. And now she's back on 50. Like, what am I missing here? I guess like there's no big moves, no big moments that I can ever point to of being like, yeah, that's why Aubrey is a four-time Survivor player.
It's all Ko Rong. It's all the question of Ko Rong where she went out and she played. And she did make the big blind side of Debbie on that season. A lot of people felt that she should have won. She should have beaten Michelle because she played this really great strategic game. And what happened is she really built up a massive fan base from that feeling of she should have beaten Michelle. I mean, we see this a lot throughout Survivor history. I mean, Colby obviously had a bigger fan base. He's the first hero in Survivor history, but him losing to Tina is probably why we've seen Colby play four times instead of just fizzling out after All-Stars. Because if he plays All-Stars and he gets voted out early, how many of those winners have we seen play again? We've actually seen quite a few come back. You know, we saw Tina come back for Blood versus Water, but you know, you're not going to get it to the same level that Colby is, where we got to bring him back for Heroes versus Villains. He's the first hero and he hasn't won, because and that's his story. He took the wrong person to the end. And there was that feeling after Ko-Rong. I mean, as a Michelle defender, it was like Aubrey should have won. Here's what she did. Here's this. And he won down the line. And I think that's just built such a fan base. And what's interesting is I thought with the edit that Aubrey has gotten this season, I thought for sure that the Aubrey stands would be out in full force. And they just haven't been. And I find that
there are that many.
But there were so many during Ko-Rong. I mean, we were recording during Ko-Rong, and I remember I was like just getting roasted for saying Michelle could win and loving Michelle. And people thought that was like the dumbest take. It was all there.
Yeah, I haven't rewatched Ko-Rong, so it's what, 10, 11 years ago. I do remember in the time, like, not, I remember thinking Michelle should have won over Aubrey, or like being like either one. Like, you, I mean, I think I honestly might have been rooting for Ty, to be honest with you. Like, again, it's nothing against Aubrey personally. I'm sure she's fine, but like, that's the thing. She's fine. Like, I don't understand the like, and it's nothing on her as much as it's, you know, Jeff for the casting, who's ever deciding. Like, I just don't know. I know you said she's got the Aubrey stance, but I feel like I can't remember the last time I've seen someone like so hated. I feel like this season there's so many Aubrey haters out there.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, all right, yeah, maybe during her season they were just rooting for her because it's like, you know, you only have so many people to choose from. But here, when you've got all these Survivor legends, I think she just kind of pales in comparison.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating if she does end up winning this season to see what the reaction is like after is all said and done.
Because obviously, it'll leave a bad taste in the mouth of the whole season.
You really think so?
Well, let's see what happens. Like, well, like, so I think Suri winning, and we're ready to crown this the greatest season of television, the greatest piece of art I think ever made, like above the Mona Lisa. Like, we would consider season 50 to be just the greatest piece of art in any medium ever made if Suri wins. Aubrey, I think, would be disappointing. Like, I mean, Joe would almost just be like funny, you know. Like, I think Tiffany, you're like, okay, fine. Rizzo, I like Rizzo, but I could see him like being a little bit disappointing in terms of like he's such a new player, but he's super likable and fun to root for. Who else is there? Jonathan, you're probably like, okay, you know. It sucks that there's not a lot. Devins would be great. Devins would be a great winner. It sucks that there's not a lot of people left, we'd be like, that's a great winner. If they win, that's a great winner.
Yeah. No, and I think that's what's going to be fascinating when all is said and done. And what I love, and this is for the positive here on Aubrey, because, you know, like you said, you haven't met Aubrey. I've met Aubrey, and every interaction I've ever had with Aubrey has been great. And that's not
sure just me. Plus.
Yeah, and that's not me being like, no, Aubrey, like, please, like us. It's just like, I've had nothing but good interactions with her, but that was even after she knew I was the biggest Michelle stan in the world. Like, she knows that I was rooting for Michelle and all that. But the one thing I will say about Aubrey, if her arc in Survivor history is robbed, as people think, to pretty much invisible, to pretty much just gets duped and made to look like a fool in Edge of Extinction with an idol in her pocket, gets voted out, like every confessional, or she's the only one with a confessional as she's about to get voted out from the after immunity challenge to pre-tribal. She's the only person who gets confessional.
Wow.
She's narrating. Yeah, you got to rewatch the episode. She's narrating her own downfall.
That's crazy.
And so if that's her arc and then it ends with her winning, I think if you look at the 4-season arc of Aubrey, it's very satisfying. But I agree with you that the overall season 50 arc, it would feel like I'm rooting for a pre-40 person to win. But Aubrey winning with the game that she's currently playing, I think would be like, okay, I got what I wanted, but I didn't really get what I wanted.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying about like arcs in general. And that's something we've been talking about a lot this season, is that I do think Final Tribal Council, people are going to not just be voting on 50 as much as they're going to be voting on like their full Survivor story, which is why I said I feel bad for Rizzo, because I think he's in a real tough spot because they've never seen him play. right? So I think it's actually been really good strategy by him this season, even though I don't think it was even like intentionally strategy as much as genuine, is they're looking at him as a fan, right? They're looking at him as, we've never seen this kid play Survivor. He's just coming up to us all day, telling us how much he loves us, how great we are at the game, how much he grew up watching us. So like it was smart by him, I think, to lower his threat level. Cause like, you know, you could be a Russell Hantz going to season 20. Everyone's like, oh, this guy's a big villain. Obviously, I think Rizzo has done a really good job of like, be almost being like, I'm not even on your level, guys. Like, you don't got to vote me out, right? Like, I'm not even on your level. You don't have to worry about me. That being said, I think it'll be tough to like all of a sudden then flip that switch at Final Tribal Council. But yeah, so I think that is something like Suri obviously is the biggest example of a legacy. Is Suri the only one left along with Aubrey who's played more than once?
Yeah. Because it's all new era people, and then Devin's didn't get a chance.
Right. So yeah, I think that would be a massive leg up for Aubrey or Suri.
Yeah. And the other thing here, you know, talking about just, oh God, I totally lost the point here. But with Aubrey's entire arc and everything like that, I wonder if that's just what's going to carry her over the edge. But if she doesn't make a big move here at the end, then what do you do? You know what I mean? Like what if you're an editor and Aubrey's entire game is really just like, she was able to skate by and then she was just the most liked person on the jury. What is the story you're telling if she's not the reason Genevieve actually went home or Devins goes home or Suri goes home? Because if she sits next to Joe and Rizzo, she wins. If she sits next to Tiffany and Rizzo, she wins. Like any combination of that. I think she might beat Jonathan. I think her and Jonathan is close, but she beats most of the people left in the game just based on who she is. And that might be one of the flaws of just season 50's design overall.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I'm trying to think of her in comparison to the other one. Yeah, I mean, clearly they are setting up that she's going to make a big late move, right? Because you talked about with the Michelle confessional, everything. Like, you got it's better strike, you know, late than never. So I don't know. Maybe she takes out Suri. Maybe she takes out Devin. And listen, you know, I'm ready to walk all this back. Like if Aubrey ends this season pulling off insane blindsides of like Suri or Devin's or something like that, and she ends up being a very deserving winner, then obviously that's another story. But right now, like I said, outside of Suri, outside of Devins, I don't see anyone. I mean, I think Jonathan is playing sneaky well. But there's something like he's doing it without a certain je ne sais quoi, as they say. Like he's pulling off these moves, but like people are like almost like not respecting him for it, or like they're kind of getting more bitter at him for it. Like it feels like he's not pulling it off in a way that is like he should be, I guess.
It's weird that Jonathan's almost getting like a Spencer Bledsoe second chance at it, where the humanity feels like it's missing, but the reads aren't wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great call.
Those two characters could not be any further from each other in what Survivor wants them to be. But it feels like that's kind of what we're getting a little bit here from Jonathan, where every game move he's making, the decisions he's making are right. But the personal relationships he's building, what are people seeing through? Is Christian actually going to be like, oh, thanks for my shot in the dark back? Or is it going to be more people like D who are going to be saying, I can't stand Jonathan. I don't want Jonathan at all. So,
yeah. I don't know. I mean, again, also, I think that something that is really stuck from New Era Survivor, I feel like Marianne is a great example of, it's the Goldilocks. Like,
yeah,
you got to peak at the right time. Like one big move in front of the jury with final five, final six, like that could be enough to put you over the edge as a winner.
Yeah. And I think right now, like if you watch this season and Aubrey does make a massive move at seven, or even if, you know, Jonathan now makes a massive move at seven, there were 24 people on this season. You can't come out just firing. It's not possible. You cannot win Survivor that way. And, you know, Devins is out there saying, I'm willing to make good TV at the risk of my own game. But there's other people out there who are like, no, I want the money. I don't care if I'm good TV. And I think, like, you know, you see this throughout Survivor history. Dani Boatwright did not give a shit if she was good TV. She just wanted to win Survivor. And she told them that. She said that in all of her exit press. I wasn't saying anything because I didn't want Stephanie getting fed information. And that's fair. She was more worried about the money than making good TV. That's why we've seen Dani Boatwright play one more time. And we barely saw her on that second time that she played. And Steph, we've seen twice since that season. So, you know, I understand, you know, why there'd be frustration with certain styles of play, but you know, it's also on production a little bit because every twist they put into the game is essentially rewarding people who play it safe. Because if you stick your head up too high, now one twist throws everything off and your head gets cut off. Like there's nothing you can do about it. So it's not worth sticking your neck up until you need to.
Yeah, it is. That's an interesting take because I do feel like, you know, Jeff always talks about you got to make big moves. You can't play it safe. And so they put in these twists and all these things is like to encourage people to play bigger, right? But I think it almost, like you're saying, is having the adverse effect where people are like, no, like I would never go on a journey. Like I would never want to go on a journey. I would never, like, you know, there's so many things where it's like, all right, I don't even know if I'd pick up a beware advantage, to be honest with you. Like it's rewarding safe gameplay. I think it's having the opposite effect of what they want. And also I do think a lot of the twist, the issue is like so many of them are just luck dependent, which I hate. Like the Blood Moon, what was it called? Blood Moon, Super Moon, whatever the hell it was.
Never forget the Blood Moon, man.
Yeah, that was the most overrated twist in the history of Survivor. I thought the double duos twist was great. I loved that. I thought like that should have been hyped up in the way that the Blood Moon twist was because that was a real twist. We've never had you vote out two people at the same time. We've had random tribe fucking swaps and then separate tribal councils before. There was nothing unique about that at all. And like, yeah, it just became like whatever you did over these past, whether it's 15, these past nine votes in the game, they don't matter. You're just going to be on a tribe with four other random people and see what happens. And, you know, I get that, like, it's one thing where it's like, if you've had a chance to play with everyone, because then it can be like, well, you got to make relationships with everybody you play with. But if you've never even been on a tribe with like all these people you get swapped to, what are you supposed to do?
Well, and that's why I enjoyed last week's twist, the power broker twist. I enjoyed that because at this point, everybody's played together. If you get split off to a group of four, granted, there could have been an advantage get-in type situation, but if you get split off to a group of four and you don't have good relationships with them, well, like you weren't going to get their votes in the jury phase anyway, so you probably weren't going to win Survivor. That's on you. And the Blood Moon, I mean, I know you'll probably see Will soon. If you ever want to hear Will go on like a 47-minute tangent, just bring up the Blood Moon to him. I mean, he brings it up every week and we get constant comments. Why are you still talking about the Blood Moon? Why are you still talking about the Blood Moon?
He hates it, you mean?
And he hates it because the Blood Moon essentially ruined what was up until that point a great pre-merge. And it's exactly what I was just talking about with like getting your head cut off if you stick it up too high. Camilla blindsides Charlie. The next episode, she's randomly swapped to a tribe with Jonathan, who she just blindsided. So Jonathan's in the swing position. Camilla goes home. What did Camilla do wrong? She made good TV. You don't want to be unrewarding, whatever, punishing is probably a better word. You don't want to be punishing people for making good TV.
Yeah, I'm torn on the one from last week where it's like, I do agree. Like at that point, you know, they merged at what, 14? So like you should have a good relationship with everyone in the game and like try to save yourself. But also it is just like, I don't know, just let them play Survivor. Mm-hmm. Like if we lost Suri and Ozzy from that, like I bet they would have really been kicking themselves at CBS or whoever came up with it. But, you know, I think like last week was literally just a logistics thing. Like they literally, it's just like, there's only 26 days. It was, I think, truly a production schedule. Like we have to figure out people. Were you surprised at all that they didn't do like, I know when we did Surviving Barstool last year, it was the same thing, three tribes of eight, 24 people, and it was one winning tribe, and then two tribes went to tribal council. I thought that that was going to be the case here. I think that would have helped speed things along early in the game and made, you know, less twists like the Blood Moon or this last week. I do think if I'm putting myself in their shoes, their thinking might be, we don't want to send out, like, we want to keep as many people as long as we can from a viewer perspective. But like, if you're sending two people home every week for the first 3 or 4 weeks, you're increasing your chance of losing a fan favorite, like a Suri, an Ozzy, a coach, or whoever. So maybe they were just like, hey, if we can just kick the can down the road and, like, you know, a Mike White and eliminate as few big names as possible early on, maybe then, you know, that's the way to do it.
It's always been Survivor's issue ever since All-Stars. They're terrified to lose their returning players on returning player seasons. And if you think about All-Stars, it's the longest season by episode count. There's 18 people. It's one episode for every boot until Final Four. Like Jenna Maraska quitting, Sue Hawk quitting, those are each their own episode. They don't do more because they want to get as much out of it as they can. And then you figure – you know, what was it? Redemption Island. All of a sudden there's Redemption Island. So you can have Boston Rob and Russell guaranteed on your screen for three episodes. Same thing then when you do South Pacific, same thing with Blood versus Water. Same thing then when they decide Edge of Extinction is going to be a thing for Winners at War. They want to try to keep people around as long as they can. And for me, it's conflicting because we still lost great characters early. Like, I was excited to see Jenna Lewis play again. Q going out in 22nd place sucks. But for me, I'd rather see – we've already seen all these people play. I'm okay with winning tribe wins, two tribal councils for the first 6 weeks. That's what I thought it was going to be. Eliminate 12 of the people, and then for the final 6 weeks, have pretty normal survivor. If Genevieve goes out like that, that sucks. If Colby goes out like that, aw, shucks. But for Genevieve and Colby to go out the way they did at the Blood Moon is way worse of a taste in my mouth. Like, I don't feel satisfied that I got two extra episodes of Colby and Genevieve just so that I could watch them go out in one of the most bullshit twists in the history of the show. So for me, I'd rather, if they do it with all newbies, especially like we don't have a relationship with those people and you have hour and a half episodes, you want to do 24 people, you want to go through it in 26 days, do double boots the entire pre-merge and the show would be fine. That would be great survivor. You'd be down to 12 with seven episodes left, six episodes, one boot each. And then you get down to the finale with five. I mean, that's perfect timing. It's not hard to get there.
Yeah, it's annoying. It feels like it's like the fans, like we've been screaming into the void for like years of like, please do this, please do this, please do this. And they're just not listening.
Yeah, I know. And now I have to ask you this before we start asking the questions and everything like this. You had brought up Rizzo earlier, being a huge fan. You think he's doing like a good job and how he's maneuvering it. I know you're a huge fan. I'm a huge fan. How do you play this cooler so that you can get votes at the end? Like, because I do feel like Rizzo's being seen as a character, not as a serious contender, even though he knows the game and I think is playing really well.
So, yeah, it's tough. I think that part of – have you guys talked about how – I think part of the issue for him is apparently he was, like, really sick. Like, I feel like we've seen some people talk. Have you seen people talk on Exit Press?
No, I haven't read really much of the Exit Press.
I don't read much of it either, to be honest. But I did see like some people were mentioning that he was just like really sick. And I feel like they alluded to it maybe last week or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he might have just been like laying in the shelter a lot. Like, I mean, think about it. He played 26 days or 25 days, whatever. Went home for, I think he said 9 days and then came back for this. Like, his body was probably just giving out. And so I think that maybe the real reason, like, because, like, I thought that was a major hit to his winning chances last week when Ozzy's like, I want to sit at the end with the best players. I don't want to sit there with someone like Rizzo. Like, part of that's just probably old school Ozzy being like, I respect the old school players. Mm-hmm. But I think part of it, too, is, like, he might have just been, like, really sick and, like, laying in the shelter for, like, most of the time. They're saying that's why, like, there was never a discussion of him eating the bugs, like, with Aubrey. Like, when Aubrey just bit the bullet and ate the bugs. Like, I think that he's probably like doing worse than they're letting on. And that could be affecting other people's opinions of him too. But yeah, I mean, I think he's playing it as well as you can, given the circumstances of being sick, being a fan. Like, I don't know. I think it honestly might be an unwinnable position. Like, it might be a truly unwinnable position for him where you're not going to win Survivor 50, the biggest season ever, as a guy that nobody's seen played. So try to last as long as you can and hope some things break your way in the end.
And be playing for that third time. He's like the rare one where it's, you should be looking towards your third time, Rizzo. Because if you can't win anyway, you might as well. So right. Like, if you got to compete in the challenge against Soph Bellarity, I forget the other person, and Jesse. And Jesse touched his knee, which was total BS. I mean, Jesse had you beat. You were dead to rights. There's no doubt about it, right?
I told him, he was like, don't tell me that. Like, I had probably like 10 more minutes left in me. Like, my leg, my back foot was like, I've never been in honestly probably so much pain in my life. Like, I was ready. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this anymore. But yeah, luckily I won on the technicality.
Yeah. I mean, I watched you try to walk after that and it truly was like hilarious. Like, but anyway, my point is, you've gotten to meet some of these survivors and stuff like that. You are a fan. If you were to find yourself on like a fans versus favorites type season, imagine yourself in the Rizzo position, not necessarily playing back to back, but like, are there any players that you think you would kind of be blah, 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 around, or do you feel like you would be able to pretty much keep your cool around everybody? It doesn't really matter to you.
I would be able to keep my cool. I mean, like, the biggest ones are like, like Tony, like I've met Boston Rob, like I've talked to Russell before. Like I'm trying to think of like people that I like haven't met or interacted with at all. Like Tony would be a big one. But I think I would be able to keep it cool, like just from a gameplay perspective. Like I think I would be like, hey man, like, you know, I'm a big fan or whatever, but I don't know, it's a tough bet. Also, like a fans versus favorite season is so different where it is half fans and half returning players. Whereas this felt like fans versus favorites, Rizzo the fan versus 23 favorites or 22 favorites, you know, take out Savannah. But like that would like, so it's a different mindset. But yeah, I think Tony would probably be the one that I would get the most starstruck around at this point.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because like I know obviously, you know, you're over at Barstool, like you're around these big personalities doing this all the time. So I'd kind of expect, like I've interviewed so many of these people, I've met these people. I don't feel like there'd be anybody who'd be like, whoa, I can't like go to them. But I have been really impressed with Rizzo doing this season, being that like he's not coming from some like media world. He's not coming from like something where he's always interacting. I know he was the guy who would always go to these fan events, but he's going to these fan events. Like we had Joe Mena on the podcast and there's Rizzo with a picture of Joe Mena from like 2017 or something like that. And Joe Mena's like, I didn't remember this kid. I probably thought he was a little punk, like whatever. And it's funny though, because like Rizzo's on the other side, we can just come up and be like, I'm Rizzo, I'm a huge fan, whatever. And he can be as over the top as he wants because he is a fan. He's coming to meet you at a meet and greet event with fans. But then when he got on the island, I was impressed that he was able to just be like, okay, these are my peers now. Like, it's cool that I'm meeting Coach.
You think he did that? I feel like he didn't. I feel like he was still like treating him like the meet and greet. I'm going to beach with Colby. And like, he played it off well because he's like charming and very charismatic. But I don't think I don't think even Rizzo would say he played it cool with them.
I guess what I'm saying is like, I hear what you're saying because he definitely was. I'm on the beach, but I feel like most of that was in confessional. Like, I feel like, you know, he was a little weird to Colby at first, and all of a sudden, like 24 hours later, him and Colby are best buddies. I just feel like he did a really good job of ingratiating himself with those people. And he could have went the other route where it was just so much for him. And he was like, oh my God, this is the best day of my life. I love this. And he's getting voted out third because he's playing it as if like he's on vacation with his
idol. Well, yeah. So I think that the good thing for Rizzo is like at his core, he's just very likable. Like I think that, you know, people might see the, you know, R-I-Z-G-O-D stuff and whatever, like roll their eyes. But he maybe annoys Colby the first hour or two. But then, you know, you spend 24, 48 hours on a literal deserted island with someone, like they're not going to keep that up the whole time. And I think he probably got to know Rizzo. It was like, oh, this is a nice, affable young man. And so I think he is able to win people over. And like, I mean, even like the audience too. Like I remember like when we saw at the end of 48, like when he was in the trailer for 49, it's like, oh, this is cinema. Everyone probably rolled their eyes and you watch him on a season. Oh, this guy's really likable. So I think that, I don't know if I would say he did a good job playing it cool, but I would say he did a good job of like, even though he didn't play it cool at first, like being able to still prove that like it came from a place of like genuineness. And like, because that's the thing with him too, is like it never felt fake. It never felt like he was like blowing smoke up their ass just for the sake of the game. Like I think they could tell like, oh, this is genuine. And then there, I mean, look at Suri is taking him in like a son, like, you know, able to lead. I think he's done a good job of leading with the fandom, and then, you know, as time goes on, being like, all right, here I am though as a person and as a player, which I think has been very impressive.
Yeah, I think it's been a good strategy. Like you said, it might have been just a losing position no matter what, but I do think it's been a good strategy for him because, you know, the easiest way to get under people that are kind of above you in status, to get under their, you know, to get on their good side is just compliment them. And yeah. I think his were all genuine compliments, though. It wasn't like, wow, you have the best hair I've ever seen. It was like, no, I legitimately have been watching you since I was 6 years old and I love you. And like, I miss this and this. It was like when Savannah was talking to Colby and she was like, you've done a lot for my family. We were like such big Colby fans and stuff. You're not just going to randomly say that to this old man on an island, you know, like this is legit. And so I think that that's worked for a lot of people here for sure. So
everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question. What's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge. They also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold. Let's jump over to the questions. And this will spark some, fun, I am sure. So right now in the battle for the Pop Funko from Todd, Wentworth Will Not Count has 53, but the lead is getting smaller. It is now just 4. Braden S has 49. If Wentworth Will Not Count loses, it'll be like the biggest blown lead since the Warriors are up 3-1 on the Cavs or something. Like they've been leading the entire season. It's been crazy. They were up by like 9 or 10 points at one point. Now it is strictly 4. New Blake fan, 47. Billy Gertz, 47. Mother Mushaluck, 46. A bunch of people with 45 and 44. So it's still open. Only top place gets anything. So here's our 10 questions for this week, and we're going to dive into them here. Number one, I'm like really having to dig to the bottom of the barrel here because I'm now trying to avoid watching the sneak peeks. I'm trying to avoid doing questions that could be impacted by the sneak peeks because earlier in the season, I was doing like, who's going to get the first confessional of the episode? And the sneak peeks that Survivor's putting out this season are like the first 5 minutes of every episode. So you'll see a mouth blur. You'll see a something get dropped. And I'm just like, okay, well, this sucks. There still might be some in here. If there are, congrats to everybody.
I thought you were talking about like, I always watch the scenes for next week. I never watch the sneak peeks.
I try not to, but then what'll happen is I've been watching them a little bit more this season, but then I'll put up the questions and then the sneak peek will drop like an hour later. And I'm like, oh my God, there's the episode title. There's a blurred mouth. There's the first confessional of the episode. All of it's right there. And I can't go change the questions because people have already answered. So we'll see how this goes. Question number one, who will say idol? So we only have one idol left in the game, which is Rizzo's, but who do you think is actually going to say the word
so
idol?
Can I answer like multiple people or can I only
so
say one?
With the game that we do over on Real TV Fantasy, it is just one,
just
but
one.
If you want to just like name out a couple people that you think will do it audience, you know,
I'm going to say Rizzo. Like that feels like the most obvious one. He's the only one with an idol, correct? As far as we know. You know, Devin's probably will say it at some point of like, I gotta look for an idol, but I'm sure Rizzo will. I could see Rizzo like just being like, yeah, I'm the only one with an idol now, or like something like that. So I think he feels like the safest bet.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Sari because I think that Sari is gonna say something along the lines of, why didn't Ozzy play his idol? Rizzo, what did you do? And so I think Sari's going to say it. I think pretty much this is one of those questions. Some of these answers are just one. Some of them can be all seven people. I think this is one of those answers that's probably going to be six of the people. And Joe's just going to be like, idol.
I was about to say the same thing. Like, I think everybody will say idol this episode, probably besides Joe.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So I'm going with Sari. You're going with Rizzo. Who will win immunity? Ozzy did not tie Boston Rob's record. Were you surprised with that considering how much of a story they seemed like they were making that?
Yeah, like they mentioned that so many times. And it's also like, I don't really care that. Like they both played like so many seasons where it's like, all right, whatever. Like it was funny how often that was mentioned and it just had no payoff. I went with Tiffany Redemption for you know, losing whatever, getting disqualified last week. She's also just like, she's pretty good all around. She might be the best all around challenge competitor or Jonathan as well. But Jonathan low key, kind of a choker in the individual challenges. I'm ready to say, I know he won last week technically, but like, he's like the regular season hitter who can't hit in the playoffs. Like in the pre-merge, he's fucking Goliath. He's literally carrying his teammates through the ocean. He's not as good in those individual challenges. Now, I know a lot of it is because it's like, you know, balance and he's got these big feet or whatever. But I think Tiffany, like, it might be the best threat, like triple threat of all. Or Joe. Joe's great, too. But I don't know. I'm with Tiffany.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Joe here. I hear what you're saying, though, with Jonathan. Jonathan just had the win last week, and it was like whatever horse in the Derby like a decade ago won because of the disqualification or however long ago it was.
Yeah. I lost that horse. Yes, I had the horse that got disqualified.
Because the horse that got disqualified was like one of the favorites, and the other horse was a long shot and all this stuff. And then that horse goes and runs the Preakness or runs the Belmont and gets absolutely destroyed. I don't think they were close in whatever race it was that they ran next. So I feel like that's where Jonathan's at. Jonathan's won this challenge twice. And if I'm not mistaken, and I could be because I can't even remember what happened on this season, but is that the only time he's won individual immunity is this challenge?
I was going to say the same thing. Like, I don't know. I know he didn't win a lot like when he was on last time. And that's definitely his first one this time, right? So, yeah, it might be.
And if you think about both of those wins, one were because of a disqualification and the other was because the water was so rough. Everybody just fell over and he was just like a rock. So
3 minutes.
Yeah. They didn't even get to the top platform last time, but I'm going to go with Joe here. I don't know. We really haven't seen Joe do much immunity challenge wise this season. And he was so good on his season. Maybe there'll be something that's in his wheelhouse here. So I'm going to go with Joe. And I really, really, really wish that Devin's was the one who I was picking for this because I really want Devin's and Sari both in that finale. I want it.
Yeah.
Bad. All right. Next up, who will mention a player on this season that is no longer in the game?
So I said Sari here for the same reason that you said the idol. Like it feels obvious that she's going to mention Ozzy. Oh, I lost Ozzy. That like I think is like 100% lock.
Yeah, I feel like that's a lock. I feel like Rizzo's a lock. I'm going to go with Joe again. And this is more to like help people or not help people out, but like, just let's think about this a little bit differently in case they cut the scene of Sari and Rizzo talking about it. I'm going with Joe because Joe's going to say we got rid of Ozzy instead of Devin. Jones or Ozzy instead of Aubrey or something. I didn't want to get rid of Ozzy. This kills me. And then I come back and Rick Devins is still here. What is he's going to be so angry, and it's going to just be like, nobody's ever had it harder than Joe with Rick Devins. Okay.
Are you where are you at with Joe?
I think that Joe needed time in between his games, because right now he has no idea what's happening and he's just spinning in a circle. Like, I feel like he's wearing a blindfold.
He did and technically have like a year, but
he, well, so this was a point, I think it was Omer brought it up last week when I was talking to him. He had a year, but he actually only had like 5 days in between everybody watching him lose and him going out there.
Yeah.
So he's hearing the internet say, you deserve to win. You deserve to win. You should have won. You played a great game, Joe, or all these positive things. People were saying that. Yeah. Yeah.
That must have been like the Facebook Survivor fans. I feel like mostly. The Survivor fans were like, oh, Kyle, obviously.
Yeah, but I mean, Blake, one of my co-hosts, he said 98.6% chance Joe wins. So that shows you what the specialists know. But people were high on Joe. And I think Joe's coming out of that season going, I don't have to play that different of a game. I can be the hero again. And now it's just like, you know, he's blindfolded. They're spinning him around and hit the pinata. And he's walking the complete opposite direction of the pinata at this point. He has no idea where he's going. And so I am worried. It's not even like I'm worried. Like, Joe is just along for the ride on this season. You get one of those like every season on a returning player season. Like, I love Troizan. We saw nothing from Troizan on Game Changers at all. And he made a deep run and he was a massive personality on One World. Sometimes the season just doesn't line up, but it's almost like now they've made him the butt of every joke where he's just the wet rag every time.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, he's so miserable every time.
So I liked Joe at first last season, 48. I was like, oh, like I still think he's like his social game incredible, like really good. But then like I thought he was gonna take like a Tony-esque turn of turning that social game into cutthroat moves. That never happened. So by the end of it, I was like sick of Joe and the whole kumbaya, we gotta play honor. Glad Kyle won. And then like there's been parts of the season where I've been like, oh fuck Joe. Like he's what do you say? It's like sickening or disgusting the way Devins is playing Survivor. But the counter argument is I do appreciate it. Like, I am starting to appreciate it from like an entertainment standpoint and like what it brings to the TV, because, you know, I complain a lot of like Survivor. I always say they cast too many like baristas in Brooklyn, like too many people who are just game bots who love the show, super fans. And it's good to have some of that, but you need some people that like, the game can be played around. Like, you need some like pawns that can be moved around. And like Joe just kind of being there, like, you know, playing in the sand, as Clemmer, my co-host, likes to say, like all the whole time. Like, it is, he's not gonna win. And like, you know, there's part of me where it's like, all right, maybe Survivor 50, we could have given that spot to someone who was gonna play a little bit more strategic. But I've come to like, I'm almost getting to the point of ironically rooting for Joe. I'm almost gonna Gabler him.
I love that. See, Gabler, I think, is an infinitely better player than Joe. Like, infinitely. And we can, that's a different podcast. But
yeah,
my thing with Joe and Gordon Holmes had said earlier in the season, every season needs an Abby Maria. Like, you need a character who can't win, but is there and is a thorn in the side. And like you said, is somebody you have to play around. And I do think that every season needs a Joe. And I think it's okay for a player like Joe to make a deep run in the game twice. I think that's fine, because there were seasons of Survivor that Joe would have won. Absolutely. Like, especially early on in the history of the show. I'm okay with more people like that. Like, I don't need to watch, you know, 500 Cochran wannabes. And that seems to be a lot of what the new era becomes. And even Rizzo, I don't need 17 other Rizzos. One Rizzo is fine. That's what makes it compelling. Jake Latimer would have been Joe last season. Like, Jake Latimer, he would have come out, been the guy that a lot of people got along with. He was big, he was muscular, he's going to carry through challenges. But what was his strategic game going to be? It was going to be played by somebody else. And so they're starting to put that character back on, which I appreciate. And I still think Joe is popular enough with certain sects of this community that they will keep him. They will keep
him. You know, I think, like, in that thing, it was one of the greatest casts of the new era is David from season 48.
Amazing.
A guy who I think he thought he was applying to the challenge, right, is the story. Like, didn't even really know what Survivor was. Just this big, hot, dumb meathead. Like that, you need more of those.
Mm-hmm. And David delivers on the confessionals and the conflict. I would watch David in a second. All right. Who will have fewer than six confessionals? So we're down to final seven. I'll read off to everybody real quick. Rick Devins has hit six or more three times in 11 episodes. You would think it would be more. He's actually currently the leader in confessionals that's left in the season too. So Rick Devins has hit six or more three times. Saree has hit it three times. Jonathan has hit it three times. Rizzo has hit it twice. Aubrey has never gotten six confessionals in an episode of the season. Actually, she's never had five. Joe has never had more than five. And Tiffany had six once. So who are you taking for fewer than six?
Fewer than six? Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, statistically, then we got a great shot with all of them. But, well, no, I guess there's less players left. But I'll say Tiffany. I think she's the most under-edited player of everyone left. And, like, I think we said, like, Saree and Rizzo are going to have the whole Ozzy discussion. Devins is obviously always a big character. Saree's always going to get hers. I'll take Tiffany. Unless she's going home, then, you know, she'll get that.
But that's what I worry about. Like, with how bad her edit was early on, is there the potential that they were just not editing her much because she goes into this, like, just before the finale boot, and they're just, okay, we want to build right up our final six a little bit more. I'm going to go with Rizzo. I think the sickness thing that you mentioned really sticks with me. And he was having a great edit early on, and his last four episodes are 3-1-1-3. And yeah. I feel like even though he's more important here and there's fewer players, I could see him getting two or three again because maybe he's just not delivering. And that's something people always talk about. What about confessionals? Why isn't this person getting them? Why is this person getting them? If the person's not the winner and they're not delivering, they're not going to put them on the show. And right now, if Rizzo's just exhausted and he's not feeling good and he's not giving that same energy that you got from Rizzo in his first season, you're not gonna go to him as often.
Yeah.
That happens.
Listen, they're making a TV show. They're going to put on the best confess. But, like, that is a reason to me where, like, Tiffany can't win. Because yeah. she was so under-edited early on. Where she had, what, one confessional through how many? Four, five, six episodes. Yeah. Like, she was invisible early on. And she's been way better post-merge. And I like Tiffany. I think she's, like, a fun character. I think she's pretty good at the game. You know, like, I'm never like, oh, that's too much Tiffany. So I like her. I was, like, kind of like she was probably the one from on the cast where people were like, wait, how is she back here? But I think she's, like, proved she's, like, earned it. I think she's been good, but she's not going to win.
Yeah. Yeah, she had two. Looking at it now, she had two the entire pre-merge. Yeah. That was it. So yeah. There's no way she's not winning. Who will be the last person to get their first confessional in the episode? So meaning, you know, last week it was Emily. Everybody else got their first confessional, and then Emily was the last one left. So the total random lucky one, who are you going with here?
I took Joe here. Where everybody, like, right, I think right after Tribal, like, is going to be talking about those votes, and Joe will be playing in the sand, as they say. And then eventually we'll get to Joe to talk about how we want Stebbins out tonight. But I don't know. I mean, like you said, this is really a random draw, but I took Joe last.
So did you get, like, a screener? Is that how you know he's going to say he wants Stebbins out? Because that's a crazy wild take right there. That's
I know. Just a gut feeling.
I mean, it's funny every time. Everybody had a good time except for Joe and Jonathan. There's Joe just, like, the most miserable expression on his face. I just want to know, are you having fun, Joe? Like, were you having fun out there? Because it seems like he was just beaten down by just Rick Devins being in his presence. I'm going to go with Tiffany for this one because I don't think Tiffany's integral to the stories of the Tribals. I feel like we'll hear from Jonathan. We'll hear from Aubrey. We're going to hear from Saree and Rizzo. I think even we'll hear from Joe because, like, again, we're going to get that misery over Devins. We're going to hear from Devins. Where does Tiffany fit into all of this? I don't really know. She doesn't need to be that. She doesn't need to be front and center on any of the storylines coming out of it. So I'm going to go with her.
It's a good point.
This one should probably be last, but I don't know how to order them over here. So this one's just here now. Who'll be voted out?
I went Devins, pains me. I mean, I feel like it's got to be him or Saree, right? Like, I think it just, like, at a certain point, they're going to have to look around and be like, there are two people here that are clearly playing the best and have the best chance to win. Neither of them have idols, as far as we know, going into the episode. And I just, like, don't want to say Saree. So I went Devins.
See, I'm going Saree strictly because Devins was preseason winner pick. Otherwise, I'd probably be saying Devins, but I got to get Devins into the finale. That's got to happen. I'm fingers crossed praying that Devins and Cerebo survived this. And it's not a knock on the others. It's just that's what we want.
Yeah. I mean, think about the, you know how they always do like the hype promos for the finale, like individually. Like, think about Cerise, like, after five, like, is she finally going to be able to pull it off? You know, like that, that's getting me, oh, it's getting me hyped up.
Yeah. No, that would be amazing. And I hope, like, Cerise and Devins, that automatically means, too, like, we're getting one of them at Final Five. We could be getting one of them at Final Four with Fire Making. You know what I mean? Like,
if
you get them both at six, there's a likelihood you could get one of them at four. And that's what I'm rooting for at this point, because I'm fine with a Jonathan or an Aubrey win. Joe would blow my mind. Rizzo, I just don't think is going to happen. Tiff's not going to happen. Like, but Cerise and Devins, that's where my heart is at this point. And if Cerise loses again, all those people who say Cerise, you know, the best to never win, she's also lost the most times in Survivor history. I'm just saying, you know.
Oh, come on. You're better than that, Phil. Her reputation precedes her. But I was actually saying, like, it is like, I know that there's people who are like, why? Like, just get rid of Cerise early. Just get rid of Cerise early. But also, like, I don't know. Like, I do think this season, like, the unspoken 25th player was like the fans and like social media, where there were probably some people early on like, I don't want to be the one to vote out Cerise and like get the wrath of that. But even taking that out of it, it's like, she's not like, you could pretty much, like, Cerise could come in sixth every time, you know? Yeah. You don't have to worry about Cerise going on a crazy immunity run or, like, finding these idols at the end of the game. Like, you could work with Cerise because she is a good ally, like, to have on your side if you're genuinely with her. You could work with her until, you know, final six, like, hide behind her, sort of use her as a shield, and then be like, all right, well, obviously you can't get to the end. See you, Cerise.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you're playing, like, around the world, basketball, you know, and it's like you're doing all your shots and you're playing with somebody who legitimately can't reach from the 3-point line. You know that they can hit the layup, they can hit it from the free throw line, they can hit it from the elbows, but as soon as they have to do a 3-pointer, they're going to be short every time and they're not going to miraculously get strength.
Yeah.
And that's where Cerise's at. Like, you know that she cannot win a challenge. And if she can win one, you know she can't win two. Like, it's just like, it's not going to strike twice for her. And so I feel like, you know, you're saying to yourself, great, Cerise's there. She's always going to be somebody we can all agree to vote out. So let's keep her around, because then if I get to five or six with Cerise, everybody knows we got to get rid of her before Fire because we can't let her get the final three. So if I'm at five or six with Cerise, I'm really at four or five. Like, you have to almost be looking like you're a player ahead once you're down to this amount of numbers. But I'm still going to go with her as being the person voted out because, I don't know, maybe Devins pulls something off. I don't know. So who will cast the deciding vote this week? So the one that Jeff says when he says blank player voted out.
I said Aubrey, but that's really based on nothing.
You just wanted to put her as an answer.
Yeah. And like, I do think that like she could be a swing vote. I can't remember. Like, I can't really tell you an alliance right now. Like, you know, like you would have said Cerise and Rizzo, but that might be fractured because of Ozzy. Like, there are people who have voted together, but I can't, like a lot of times Survivor, I feel like this is always what happens in returnee seasons, as it's things shift so much, but like, you know, Devins and Emily were an alliance. I can't give you like a concrete alliance of three or four, let alone even like two.
Yeah. And what's weird, I feel like Tiffany and Cerise are really close, but we haven't heard that at all. We've just seen it. So it's like, they don't want us to believe that. Jonathan's on an island. Joe, I don't really know. Like, we know Joe and Devins are butting heads, but we don't really know
how they're coming. Joe and together. Tiffany have had they blonded at the spaghetti alliance. Right?
Yeah, they had the spaghetti together, and Cerise and Rizzo feels like it's over.
Right.
I don't know. It's weird because it felt like there was the clear honor and integrity versus the middle, which was everybody else.
Yeah.
And now we're sitting at final seven and I really don't know, which maybe is what they purposely want, because maybe this will be where that final four alliance is just formed and they just take off.
Right.
Who will have the most confessional? Oh, I didn't say who I was taking. I'm going to take Jonathan. Same reason as you. I have no idea. Who's going to have the most confessionals this week?
I said Cerise. I mean, I feel like she's, you know, kind of the narrator of the season. She's usually a pretty safe bet. And if she is, like I said, I have a bad feeling it's going to be her, Devins. And if it is Cerise, like we are going to get, like, I think Survivor's done a good job this year giving us like emotional farewells. Like Coach had almost like a 2-episode thing of just like him being Coach. Colby had a good one. Ozzy last week, obviously, like from the second he was crying about his dad on the hammock with Devins, I was like, either Ozzy is winning this game or he's going home tonight. But he got like a very like deserving send off. Whenever Suri goes home, it is going to be a deserving send off. So I think for that reason, I take her in case she's going home. But even if she's not going home, she's got a pretty good chance to be a leader anyway.
Yeah, I'm hedging my bets here, and this is where I'm putting Devins. Because pretty much what you just said, Devins or Suri, whichever one of them goes home, they're going to get the most confessionals that week. It was funny that last week it was Jonathan who had the most instead of Ozzy, but that was also because he was the one who had to go back and forth the entire time. Otherwise, you know that that would have been Ozzy's episode. But in what I think is going to be a standard episode, I think it's either going to be Suri or it's going to be Devins because one of them is going to go home. And since I already have Suri going home, I'll hedge my bets here and take Devins as the person with the most confessionals. So, who will have their mouth blurred? Wait, were you going to say something? I was on the other screen. Okay.
No.
Who will have their mouth blurred?
I said Aubrey. I just feel like she kind of maybe curses the most. I don't know. I can't think of like, it's another tough one, but I could see her like a snarky comment gets her mouth blurred. Mm.
I'm going to go with Devins here too, because Devins has pretty much been the reason why this question hasn't worked for most weeks. I would always ask who's going to have their mouth blurred. And then the sneak peek would come out and you'd see Devins just having his mouth blurred immediately. It's like, why does this keep happening? So I'm going to go with Devins because I have taken note of how many times his mouth has been blurred this
season. Oh, I haven't even noticed that.
Because like, we don't think about those things. You have to watch. If you're watching the episode for prop bets, you start to notice when you're not. Yeah. Like, who cares? You know? And then the last one is who will say the episode title, which the episode title is inconceivable.
Which is weirdly short, right? I feel like they're usually phrases. I think the best about this one of all of them. I could just picture Rizzo saying this, like it is inconceivable. Like I literally am picturing it like him sitting on that rock in the water. Like it is inconceivable that these people, you know, whatever it's going to be. But that to me, like I like saw that in my head.
I mean, I love the vision. I'm going Aubrey because I can see it. But after you just did that, and that was a pretty good Rizzo impersonation, I'm like, wait. Is this already done? Again, I'm worried. I'm worried that you saw this in some dream or something. But I'm going to go with Aubrey. I feel like inconceivable is like enough syllables to get, you know, Aubrey's cerebral original brain.
Right.
This is where she starts to take over the game, maybe. Aubrey gets the confession.
I'm going to say it's not Joe. this is one too many syllables for our guy, Joe.
It's not Joe or Jonathan. Let's be real. Both of our big, strong guys are not dropping inconceivable. What are the odds that this is a reference to The Princess Bride? Do you think that that's high or no?
To what?
You've never seen The Princess Bride?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Okay. the movie The Princess Bride. I thought, Tommy, for sure you were seeing that. The movie The Princess Bride, there's a very infamous scene of Wallace Shawn just consistently saying inconceivable. So I wonder if this will be a reference to that at all. But probably not if it's Rizzo.
Inconceivable. I can see it. I'm visualizing it.
Yeah, no, I could see it for sure as well. So you went with Devins as the boot. In your ideal world, who would go home in this episode?
Aubrey.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, just because I'm thinking of, like, how do we get Suri or Devins to win? And, like, so you don't want it to be either of them going home. I think Aubrey is their biggest threat to win at this point. Her, Jonathan, like Joe, you can drag to the end. He's not going to win. I don't think Tiffany's going to win. I like Rizzo. So yeah, I guess it would be Aubrey or Jonathan if I'm going off that. And I just like Jonathan more. So I would say Aubrey.
Gotcha. And what do you think the alliance is going to be? Cause you were talking about, you don't see the alliances right now. You don't really know who's aligned with who. We're at 7. I think this is going to be a normal vote. We don't need another double boot. I think we're going to get standard. Who do you see teaming up?
So I think it's going to be, I think it actually might be like a 6-1. Like, I think if it's Suri or Devins, there's a chance that it's just like a 6-1, you know, like unless there ends up being a vote split or something, which I guess if it's Devins, you probably always got to do a vote split. But I kind of feel like if it's Suri, I bet it's a 6-1 where it's like, or maybe Rizzo's like, I can't do that to you. But I feel like it would be one of those where it's like, Suri, we got to do it. Like, you know, we got to do it. Or Devins too. Or like, you know, like I said, maybe then. But I think whoever gets voted out, if it's one of those two, it's like everybody's against them.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out who they would all team up on, and like if anybody's gonna say my best bet is actually to work with Devins and Siri, like could it be?
You'd have to be so stupid.
Yeah, I know. And Joe's never gonna work with them. And Aubrey maybe says, I want to keep around the old schoolers just so that it's not a 4-2 disadvantage going into final six if she's worried about a new era kind of thing. I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. What I will say about this season that's been interesting is there's been almost no discussion on Island about old era versus new era. And I think that's very fascinating because in the post-game press, they haven't shut up about
it. Yeah, I haven't even seen that much in the post-game. To me, it was more like old school mindset, like whereas like Joe had like the old school mindset, right, with like Colby and Coach and all those people, but like, and like even like it's weird to me to describe like Devins and Aubrey as like old era, like they're really like, you know, their first season is closer to Jonathan, like Devins and Jonathan's first season are four seasons apart, you know. Yeah. like to could define them as like different eras as opposed to Devins versus Suri, who played season 12 right for the first time. Like, so I think it's just like not, I think it was only a thing in like the, for whatever reason, the like producers and casting decided there needed to be 12 before 40 and 12 after 40. I don't really even know why they decided that needed to be a thing.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. Like it was not, the tribes weren't split up that way. It's never been referred to that way. So I think it's just like not, it's just like kind of not a thing.
Yeah, I think that was one of the more interesting decisions because that was another thing, you know, we talked about earlier. We thought that it would have been double boots for the pre-merge. And then that was another thing I thought was that if you're doing 12 and 12, it's going to be 4-4-4-4-4-4 on every tribe. And then instead it was 4-4 on one tribe, it was 5-3 on the other two. And I was like, well, then why did you bring back 12 of both eras? Why were you so committed to doing that? I still don't really know what the answer is. I'm very curious because obviously Jeff and everybody are going to say nonstop positives. But I'm very curious when they sit down and when they were planning out season 51, how happy they truly were with what took place on 50 when they were actually sitting down. What twists, what advantages, what type of casting, when they're looking at another returning player season, are they going to try to do it as an even split like that? Like, I really do wonder what they were pleased with and what ultimately fell flat for them.
Yeah, so have you seen the Inside Survivor rumors or whatever? That's 20 people?
Yeah, 20 and two tribes.
Two tribes. So, like, that to me, I feel like people have been begging for that. Like, that makes me think, oh, maybe they are taking some feedback. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on how – like, we don't know how it ends. I don't know. I'm sure they're happy with how – I feel like 50 has been, like, more culturally relevant than, like, a lot of the past Survivor seasons. And, like, to them, that's got to be a win.
Yeah, I feel like that's definitely true. I feel like you've seen so many more publications covering it. You've seen just like so many more people talking about it. I wonder how much of it will hang on for 51 and how much of it is just going to be like, that was strictly because it was 50.
Like, I think a lot of it was just because it was 50, but it is a good opportunity. Like I always said, Survivor after COVID, after 40, when so many people binge and got into it, it's such a good opportunity to strike while the iron was hot and 41 was a dud.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe the worst season ever. So I hope they don't blow that momentum with this. I do also like from the cast list that got leaked, if that's, I don't know if that was real or not, like I saw some picture of 20 people, they're fucking hot. Like they're it's a bunch of like hot guys and hot girls. Like it's like doesn't look like your typical, like I say, like Brooklyn barista Survivor fans, where it almost makes me think like was the casting even different? Because I say this as, you know, someone who has a better luck being cast obviously in like the fan spot, so I'm hesitant to say it, but no, if I wanted to give advice to the producers, like I think Survivor, like start casting it a little bit less like a competition show and a little bit more like a reality show. Like, yeah. If you want to get like we were talking about those crazy characters earlier, the Davids and these people, the Abby Marias, like start casting more like that. Like start thinking more about how they'll be as a character than as a player. And just like I said, based on that cast, I wonder did you find the picture?
I did not. I tried to do a quick Google, but I always get scared of like going on a spoiler site. If you find it, throw it up, because I mean, you know, it's been one of the main things that we've all talked about throughout the entire 40s is just the cast is so homogenous. Everybody has like the same background. I grew up in this place, but I went to an Ivy League school, or I went to Stanford, or I went to Cal, or I did something. And, you know, that's what the stories are. And then it seemed like towards the later 40s, they changed that.
I gotta find this picture.
At least a little bit.
Oh, so like this one I know is wrong. I'm pretty sure one of these is wrong because it's actually just this guy who works at CBS. Oh, wait, this.
Who's it from?
So whatever. This is the one I saw. I mean, this is like a nothing account. I'll text it to you.
Okay.
But I mean, if this is the cast, we got some hot people on here.
That's what Stephen Fishback always argues for. You know, we got to get more hot people.
Yeah, I mean, genuinely. Like, I don't know. This could be totally fake. Now that I'm looking at it, it's almost like, are these fucking AI people? But if this is the real cast, this is like would be the most beautiful cast in Survivor history.
I feel like.
Oh, someone said I have a feeling this is AI generated. There's a chance.
I think it might be AI.
I got probably completely duped by this.
Wow. Wow.
Now that I look closer, I'm like, oh no, there's no way. But
there's
not a
wrinkle on a single person in that cast.
Yeah. I mean, you see what I mean? If that was the cast, my God. But then there was this other one. Okay, this looks very more realistic, I would say.
I just tried to look at Inside Survivor. He hasn't put anything out yet, which I feel like he's normally the first one.
He is for sure.
But then he also kind of got like screwed last time, right? With 50. It felt like he was like in the mix with so many different people and then none of it came true.
Okay. This cast I just sent you, that looks way more like the new era Survivor I'm expecting.
Isn't that one guy with the beard and the hat like a massive known Survivor fan who goes to like every event?
I'm not sure.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Now I don't know. Now we're on a totally different train of thought. But so you're talking about this, though. You obviously still want to play Survivor. You want to get cast on Survivor. But, like, what's your hope for 51 and beyond? Like, what is your hope from the standpoint of who they're casting, how many returning player seasons, what you want to see, like, twist-wise and days? Like, what is your hope as a huge fan?
I want to see Survivor, like I said, like the word I always use is get back into the cultural zeitgeist. Like Traitors, right? For example, is I think if you look at the ratings, Traitors is less, it gets less viewers, I think, than Survivor. But like it feels like, you know, you're on social media too. It feels like it's so much more relevant, right? Like people, everyone feels like they're talking about Traitors. Survivor 50, I think, has done a good job. But for the most part, like no one's like, you're not talking at the water cooler about what happened on Survivor 47 or whatever. So I think finding a way to get in the cultural zeitgeist, I think the main thing is casting. Like one thing has to be casting. You have to be more diverse with your casting. Not I'm talking from a demographic perspective. I'm talking from a personality perspective. You have to cast more diverse personalities. You have to get your Keith Nails. You have to get your random hot blonde girl, your random buff guy. Like you need all these different types of players. Look for fireworks, look for problems like Abby Maria and all these people that are going to bring good reality TV more than good gameplay. Cut back on a lot of the twists, like cut back on the twists that are like so luck based and like let the players play themselves and let the players define the game. Like let each season be defined by its casts and not its twists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I think is a big problem with the 40.
And put me on. And yeah, more returning players. It was like, I mean, you can't overdo them, but 40 to 50, it was just like 41 to 49 is so hard for me to remember who was on what season. Like it's just truly one big, and I would like themed things again. And listen, yeah. I know some of them are dumb, like Heroes, Hustlers, Healers is ridiculous, but I like something to like differentiate each season. You know, we have to give up the hope of going to different locations, and that's fine. Like they're going to stay in Fiji. It'll extend the longevity of the show. Fine. But give us something so that it doesn't all feel like such a homogenous blurb.
Yeah, no. And I totally agree. It was funny. I had Owen on Saturday and he was a big defender at one point of like, and he was like, I don't even remember saying that, but I might have. So I'm gonna use it again because I'm pretty sure he did. But he was a big defender of at one point. Like my hot take is that it's not that hard to remember which players are on the people in the on the 40s, like on the seasons, each individual season.
Well, he was also on a fucking season.
But it was funny because then he said yesterday, I actually think it's ridiculous now. I can't keep track. Like yeah. So even I think the players have changed their tune where it's like, man, I can't remember who was on 46 and who was on 45 because that doesn't mean the same thing. Like Ghost Island, I could tell you the whole cast because it's right. Ghost Island. Like you remember Ghost Island. It was Navidi versus the Malolo Low. 44, That's the extent of it. Like, that's
it.
That's
Jam Jam, right? Jam Jam, Carolyn, Carson. That's all I got off rip.
Yeah. Yeah. Heidi, Danny, Franny, Matt, Matthew. And then I'd have to really start thinking after that.
Who's Heidi?
Heidi got second.
In 44?
Yeah, she's the one who made fire faster than Gabler and beat Carson out of the game and then lost 7-1.
Wait, Gabler's 43.
I know, but Gabler set the record and then Heidi broke it the next season.
Oh, yeah, I have like almost no memory. Oh, yes. Heidi. Yeah. She was a terrible player.
She was great at fire.
Yeah. But she was a terrible player, right? This is who I'm thinking of.
I mean, I don't know what happened on 44 because nobody did anything, and I can't remember right. The season aside from Jam Jam, Carolyn, and Carson, truly.
Yeah, those are like the big three, and yeah, I can't. Yeah, I mean, like, that's crazy. She's the runner-up, and, like, you know, obviously I consider myself a big Survivor fan, and she's just a total blank spot.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what they need to move away from. And then how many returning player seasons do you think we will see?
I'm selfishly hoping for fans versus favorites, 53 or 54, and maybe I get on that. Maybe you do, like, a 58 or, like, a 57. You can do, like, you know, make up your game chain, make up your random name at, you know, or at least maybe bring a few people back. You do a full one. And then I assume 60, you see, I feel like every, you know, 40, 50, 60, they'll do it. I don't think it'll be the same scope as this, but
yeah,
I would like to see two seasons with at least some form of returning players, whether it's half the cast, the whole cast, or, you know, a few people like a la Edge of Extinction, and then a full one for 60.
Yeah, I think we need at least one half, one full, and then 60. I don't want to do captains. Yeah. I don't want to go that route. Captains rarely works, but I would be down for another blood versus water, be down for another fans versus favorites.
Second chances. Like, I bet second chance they do again.
God, I would love a vote, but I don't think they ever let us vote again. Remember, this was in our hands, Tommy, and how did that work?
The Cambodia cast.
No, but in the hands of the fans.
Oh, this season, I mean that. Well, yeah, but like it was like, do you want a fun season with Twist or do you want nothing to happen? Like, I don't know. I know that like they definitely abided by it, but they really didn't give us that much power. We didn't vote on the Blood Moon, you know. Like we voted on like vague questions.
Yeah, I know. Now, if we could vote directly on the Blood Moon, I think everybody would say, "Please, no, we don't need that again." So, anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this up?
No, that's all I got, really. I mean, it's been a good season. I hope it finishes strong, but I've got my apprehensions.
What do you got going on Wednesday night?
This Wednesday night?
Yeah, is it just you? Like, is it just you? Do you have a guest?
Yeah, no, we'll be. I think just us. I don't know. I might reach out to someone. We'll see. But yeah, we'll be live. Snuff and Torches, 9:30. Right. So it's a standard 90-minute episode this week.
As far as I know, yeah, I think it's just 90.
Yeah. So we'll be live. Snuff and Torches YouTube. And on Spotify, Apple, all that the next day.
There you go. All right, everybody. Well, I'll be live. Will and I will be live on Wednesday night as well, right at 9:30. So you can watch our competing shows at the same time. I like going split screen with the volume as loud as you can. Yeah. Just ruin everybody. It's like a metal band playing then because it's just us all yelling at each other. But that's what we got going on. And then Thursday, it'll be Alexa and I doing Digging Deeper, and we will be live with Jawan from season 49 at 10 p.m. Nice. Eastern time, 7 p.m. Pacific. Jawan requested that Alexa be there because he was an original Phil and Alexa fan. So there we go. So that's going to be our Thursday night podcast. And then this Saturday, I got James Jones for predictions of power rankings for the finale. So busy week, no Matt chat this week with Tegwith. She is currently sick, so hopefully she feels better. And yeah, I took over Monday night with Tommy anyway. So thank you all for listening. Subscribe, like the video, become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. And I'll see you on Wednesday night.